it was. Not easy to find anything in the Gemara or the Rishonim Achonim that the Talmidim don't have on Google. To speak about the biography of Mori Barabi, Rabbi Belton Zatzal, you don't need me to give you his biography. I'll mention a few points. I'll try to give you a personal insight. I had much relationship with him during the years when we were pretty much under attack from the right and the left. On the right because we weren't enough of a yeshiva, and from the left because they were offering better salaries than the Orthodox communities were offering. I don't know how many of you people are aware, when I was in the Beis Medrash in the 40s, I sat at a table with six Talmidim, among them, some of you may remember the names, Rabbi Yankel Rabinowitz, who was dean here for a number of years. This Rabbi Chaim Bodek, and Mori Lustig, and the others, famous names, famous Rabbanisha families, left us for the competitors at the JTS, at the Jewish Theological Seminary. That was the competition. It wasn't as it is now, when Baruch Hashem, the movement, if anything, is in the reverse direction. It's from them to us. Let me give you some quick biography, you know, who we're dealing with. Also a reminder of how it used to be. Rav Belton Zatzal entered Yeshiva Slonim when he was 11 years old. At age 13, he went to Radin, to Rabbi Tolly Trop, and then the Chofetz Chaim. I think he was there for 2.5 years. Some of my personal relationship with Rav Belton was due to that. My father, Zatzal, learned for 5 years with the Chofetz Chaim, and the name Radin was a sesame code to open the door. Anyone who had a shaychus to Radin had open access, free access to Dr. Belton. I'm convinced that when he invited me to start saying a shir in 1949, it wasn't my yichus, it was my father that's our yichus, and it wasn't his yichus. The yichus was that he also studied the Radin. Radin was a magic word, as we'll see. Then some strange things happened to him. I never figured out myself. He ended up with a Phi Beta Kappa, a PhD from Brown, with some courses at Harvard, without having attended a high school or a college. I think it's the first and only case of a Phi Beta Kappa member who never had a high school degree. But he was, really was, Phi Beta Kappa. He was one of the keys that he always wore in those days when they wore a pocket watch. There was a Phi Beta key hanging there. I don't want to touch much on Dr. Revel Zichron Levoche. Rav Chalap Shliti will be speaking about him. I think the next lecture is by Rav Chalap. but it was Rav Revel and Rav Moshe Soloveitchik Zatzal that was our wall of defense against the right. By that I mean, when on the student protest, and I remember how clearly this was repeated to me, I had the schus yet to see Dr. Revel for a short period of time. I came into the yeshiva in 1939. That was my bar mitzvah year. I came to Rav Moshe Paleyev Zatzal, one of the most magnificent rabbim that we ever had. My father Zatzal picked Rav Paleyev as my rebbe. I spent 3 years with Rav Paleyev, and then 1 year with Dr. Belkin, Seches Gittin, and the rest of the time with the Rav. The yeshiva was under attack because the student body, in those days, I only got this story from Dr. Belkin, went on strike several times because they weren't being taught any English. English meaning the language. They were hoping for jobs in Rabbonis, and no one was preparing them for it, but they couldn't talk English. Most of them were strictly Yiddish speaking. By the way, when I came to yeshiva here, I said my shir in Yiddish. When I first went into the Rav's shir, he said his shir in Yiddish, not in English. They complained they weren't being prepared for the rabbonis. That was one of the attractions of the JTS, that they were preparing them for rabbonis. The theological distinctions were too vague for anyone to worry about. So Dr. Revel introduced. I remember the language that Dr. Belkin used, introduced an instructor who will teach in the language of the country. Not English, but the language of the country. That was the law. And that put the yeshiva under a cloud of suspicion that we're not a really yeshiva. Which yeshiva would let in someone to talk English and teach in English? And pretty well rejected. Until, strangely enough, the Agudas Rabbonim, an organization that Rav Belkin was very proud of. On his biography, you notice he lists himself as a member of a rabbinic organization. That's Agudas Rabbonim of the United States of America and Canada. They came to the support of the yeshiva and raised money for the yeshiva, because they had rabbonim, some 60 rabbonim scattered throughout America. They had kehillas, they could raise some money for the yeshiva. Finances was always a critical issue in the yeshiva. There were months of time when they just closed down, didn't do anything for want of money to provide heat, etc. When Dr. Revel passed away, and 2 months later, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik passed away, that left us exposed. The Agudas Rabbonim stepped in and tried to take over the yeshiva. Now I'm giving you this information as explained to me by Dr. Belkin's grandfather. What do they want? And again, I say, I'm leaving to Rav Chalap to go into those details. The emphasis was to the Jewish community to make the boys available to take a job. So he introduced some courses in English. That was a big chet that he did. But also in the process, opened up TI, some of you people remember, the Teachers Institute. That no longer exists. Once a very powerful unit of our institution. And the intent was to prepare teachers. We had difficulties with TI always. A green arm talking, a member of the REIT staff, because they weren't maintaining the same halachic standards, not with their teachers, not with their students, when both Dr. Revel and Rav Moshe Soloveitchik passed away, it left us exposed to all kinds of criticism. So Rabbi Elazar Silver, Zecherinu Livracha, who was president of Agudas Rabbonim, presented himself as the likely president of Yeshiva University, not university then, it was then Yitzchak Hanan, Ritz and Yeshiva College. And the goal was to divorce the yeshiva completely from the college, and especially get rid of TI, and become a yeshiva once again. That was the institution that Dr. Belkin took over. Some dates. We have a better orientation here. In June 1943, Dr. Belkin was elected as president of the institution. It's interesting to know who his competitors were. The competitors for the job, by the committee appointed to find the president, was Dr. Leo Young, Zecherinu Livracha, very powerful Rav with a German Rabbinat background, but not with the kind of yeshivish background that the people wanted. Rav Chaim Heller, Rav Yoshe Be'er Zatzal's Rebbe. Yeah. I wasn't aware until I heard from Dr. Belkin the kind of secular education that Rav Chaim Heller had. Yeah. And Rav Yoshe Be'er Zatzal, those were three competitors for the job. No one understands where Dr. Belkin came in, and he was appointed. That time he was saying a shir in yeshiva and teaching Greek philo there in the graduate school. I'll make reference to this again soon. I think I can make this contribution, but it has to come through my personal mirror, through my eyes. I brought it with me, and I'll leave it here. You can pass it around during the day, during the week, you leave it here. This is a picture of most likely the first smicha class of yeshiva in 1923 with the Major Ter Ilui Zatzal, the Rosh Yeshiva. And so I put an arrow over, that's my father, Zatzal. And I once knew some of the names of the people there. I think this is Rav Per, but there. These were yeshiva boys, meaning people who studied in Europe for many years, weren't coming to Ritz for a smicha. They had smichin, everyone had multiple smichas in those days. Before you left for America, you needed a passport and a few smichas. No problem getting it. Everybody felt it's a special mitzvah. You give up smichas. The man doesn't know much now, but he'll yeshiva bocha. He doesn't know. He won't pass kana shaila. He'll ask somebody. But you having a smichas in pocket, you'll be able to earn a living in America. So all these people had smicha before they came. Dr. Rebel put them together into a graduating class, took a picture. This was, I think, the first, maybe second graduating, the first most likely, in 1923, a graduation of Ritz. How Ritz came about, etc., I think, again, I'm sure Rav Halap will elaborate on it. I mentioned to you that my yichus with Rav Belkin, I believe, was largely due to the fact that my father was an alumnus of Rad. because of that, and Rav Belkin asked me to say a shiur in the high school in 1949. My relationship with him remained far closer than it should be for any other reason. See, what kind of family connection? I'll make this comment. There's much pathos in what I'm going to say, but I won't elaborate on it. In the days when I was studying for my doctorate, I was saying a shiur here, and I lived at 666 West 188th Street. And we'd come in the early morning to do some work in the laboratory in the then biology department. That was in a little concert hut where Pollock Library is now. And Rav Belkin, who I believe didn't eat and didn't sleep. The only thing that made him human was he smoked cigarettes. That seemed to be a legacy from the Chofetz Chaim, it must be. Because the Chofetz Chaim son-in-law, Rav Mendel Zaks, also was a smoker like you don't see nowadays. I mean, where there never was a time without a cigarette in his mouth. Some of you may remember, he smoked a cigarette called Helmar, a Turkish cigarette, which had more nicotine in it, Masamed, one cigarette than 10 cigarettes of America. And he would break the cigarette into three pieces so that his mustache was deep yellow from the smoke. And one day I asked him, why do you do that? You never stop. Before you finish this one, you light it again from the little cigarette into you smoking. Anyway, why not just leave one cigarette and smoke it straight? And here, a Talmud Chacham does everything with kavana. He answered, that's because you're not a smoker. A smoker knows that the first puff of a cigarette is the tastiest. This way I get three puffs out of a cigarette. Belkin smoked incessantly, drank coffee, pretty much didn't take care of himself. But he had one big mile. The mile came from being with the Chofetz Chaim. That is, he never got involved in machlokas. People were attacking us, not a real yeshiva, etc., etc. Dr. Belkin never answered. His famous line was, I learned from the Chofetz Chaim never to regret something I didn't say. This was a standard response that he had. I began saying yeshiva here in 1949. In 1951, Dr. Belkin was down in the laboratory. He used to come in early in the morning and stop in when he had time to say hello. I said, there's a comment with pathos I want to share with you. One day, he came in and said, no, how are you doing? How's the family? We had, Baruch Hashem, five children living in Washington Heights. So I said, oh, it's a terrible, terrible morning. Everybody is sick. The kids are coughing. Tzar Gidel Bonim. To which he responded, don't ever say that. There's no tzar if there's gidelbonim. The only tzar if there's no gidelbonim. Some of you will understand what I mean. He came in one morning and tells me, I want you to become Rav in Great Neck. I had never had the slightest yetzer for rabbonim. There's one thing that never occurred to me. So, of course, I said, no, I'm not interested. You don't have a choice. Yeah. Herman Wolk, a famous author, you're starting a community in Great Neck, the first Orthodox shul in North Shore, Long Island. And we have to send them somebody. It's very important. They should be close to yeshiva. These are very wealthy people. They have no one else to send. You have to go. I said, I don't know even how to make a drosha for people. I never made a sermon for people. It's up to go. It's not my style. Since then, I learned a few of them. But I remember this is also something that will give you a vignette in our great Rebbe, in Rav Yosher Ber Zatzal. So I went to Rav Yosher Ber. I said, Dr. Volker wants me to be a Rav. I don't know what kind of bracha you make on it. I said, how will I make a sermon? He said, I'll tell you three things. He said, one, never buy a sermon manual. Otherwise, you'll never make a sermon. Number two, he says, buy a medrash. Medrash Elkut, you'll surely find something to say. And if you look in that parsha, you can't find something to say, don't speak. That was the one. I followed that advice ever since. Yeah. I never bought a sermon manual. Baruch Hashem, I spent much time with Medroshim, as my Talmidim know. Yeah. And always find Baruch Hashem something to say from a medrash. I'll share some of it with you soon. But what's our schedule here? 10? I came back to Dr. Belkin. I told him, I spoke to the Rav even. I just don't see it. It's not fair. I don't think it's fair to ask me to do it. Okay, we'll make a deal. He said, just give me 2 years. I agreed for 2 years. Yeah. I said, why are you so insistent? She said, because actually, I signed your smichi, he says. And he told me, I'll give you the quote. If you look in the Or HaShulchan, Yehudei Reish Ben Beis, you'll see the Or HaShulchan says, the whole purpose of smicha today is to be a rov in the kehile. There's no purpose in giving smicha. Why, he says? The paskin shailis, if you know the halacha, you paskin shailis. The reason you give smicha is that no one else can paskin shailis in your kehil. For that, you have to have a kehil. Otherwise, there'd be no point in having smicha. That's how we settled for it. I was there for 2 years and was fortunate in that we started with nothing. The first time we went up there was not far from this time of the year. I went up for the first time for Shvi Shal Pesach. And I took along with me 4 boys from my class in the high school to guarantee we had a minyan, because the only sure count we had for minyan was Herman Woke and his brother. So I didn't know if we had a minyan even. Yeah. By the time I left, we had well over 115 members. Not because of my gvura, because of Yad Hashem. A few feet down from us was the Temple Israel, Rabbi Waxman, a well-known conservative leftist rabbi who had a very beautiful temple in Great Neck, it's still there. And he had a basement meeting of all the people who protested some of his innovations, like facing the Kehillah and reducing the Kriyas HaTorah to a minimum, and et cetera, et cetera. Then we opened up after a few weeks, they began drifting in. By the time I left, we had the covered Kehillah, and right now Great Neck Synagogue is still alive and well. I have been there for a long time. I was there at the 50th anniversary as a special guest, Rabbi Emeritus there. And Herman Woke remained a very powerful friend of the yeshiva. In 1952, Dr. Shelley Sapphire died. I think he was once dean also, but he and Dr. Atlas were the 2 members of the biology department. Dr. Belkin approached me and said, if you go and finish off your graduate degree, I then had a master's already from NYU. In my days, the good boys didn't go to yeshiva college. They went to yeshiva, and we went either City College at night, or if you could afforded or had a scholarship to NYU at night. I went to NYU. I took my BA and MA at NYU. Said, if you go and finish off a doctorate, then I'm quoting word for word, then you and I will be the only two faculty members who teach both in the Torah department and in the secular department. And that's what I did in 57. I finished my doctorate. How, I have the slightest idea. I don't believe I did, because I look at my notes and it says I was at Columbia at 4 o'clock in the morning, at 6 o'clock in the morning, doing laboratory readings. I have no recollection of that. It just disappeared in the haze of sleeplessness and so on. That began my more active involvement in the Dr. Bilkin's dream. Whereas Dr. Revel made already inroads in reaching into the Jewish community to prepare Rabbonim and teachers, Dr. Bilkin reached outside of the community. He was really outreach to the broad Jewish community, not just for Rabbonus, and to the American society. What followed there was first work of the Communities Service Department, right, CSD, the Community Service Department, had an outreach to the community. Meaning I'm talking about a small group of people. And myself, Yankel Rabinowitz, I said, Murray Lustig, Reichel, these people, we didn't have many people. Then we were led by, if you remember, some of you, Vic Geller, where Adam Choshev is now in Eretz Yisrael, who headed the department. And we went out to compete for new formation communities. Communities were forming all over Long Island, New Jersey, Connecticut. And we went out almost like the old-time debaters. Right? They were making up their minds. They could go either way, conservative, traditional. Then was a big power at that time, which was Nishtehel, whatever that meant. It was more traditional than conservative, but not strictly halachic. And we go out and we give lectures, the idea being to elicit response from the people. This was done almost like a private mission that Dr. Bilkin had. He had this dream of reaching out not only to the Orthodox community, but reaching out to the Jewish community. And then he decided that we have to reach out to the whole community, the whole American society. Let me share with you this, what I'm sharing with you now. I can't say that I said this with Dr. Belzin, but I said this with the Rav. In the beginning, when I would prepare a sermon, I called the Rav and checked with him whether it's saleable. You can say such things. I don't know if the Rav ever said sermons in Boston style. I don't think was that. But he was a very harsh critic. Take you from this week's Seder and from last week's Seder. Told you, he said, you have to look in the Midrashim. Listen to this Midrash on the Haftorah of last week. Haftorah of last week, Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash. Vayas labayis chaloni shkufim atumim. Words that don't have too much sense. Shokof usually would mean translucent. And oto means sealed. What is it? So, if I was learning pshat, I would say he made glass windows. Right? Glass windows, in those days, glass was very expensive. But that's not what the Medrash says. It's not what the Gemara says. Gemara Menachos says, what does Shkufim Atumim mean? It says, when you build, I quote the Loshon, says, Mishe Mevakesh Lasos Lo Chalonos, Osom rechavos mi bifinim v'tzoros mi bachutz. Would flare narrow to the street, flare inside, so you get all the light, like a pinhole camera, all the light comes in, but you reduce the exposure to the outside. And Shlomo HaMelech did the reverse. He made it tzar bibifinim v'rochav l'bachutz. So they asked him, why do you do such a thing? He said, why? Loma shi'ol yotzei mi'beis hamikdash u'meir l'olam. People have to know we are the source of light. Light doesn't come from the outside to us. This is a message that has to be shared. I shared it widely with different communities. It has to be shared here in this community too. To know we're not looking for others to teach us neither empathy nor sensitivity. We teach that to others. No one has to teach it to us. In this week's Sedler, you have Parshas Tetzaveh in the Medrash Rabba. There's Yikre Lecha Shem Zay Yizoch Lo Shani Tzorech Lehem. Not that I need it. Ela what? Hashem En Meir Lechol Olam Shenemar V'Holchu Goyim L'Orech. Chazal had to emphasize that point. We have a tendency to be very narrow in our understanding what Torah tried to teach us. It doesn't only teach us halachas. It teaches us how to live, how to relate to people. Therefore, particularly embarrassing, if not insulting, when people have to come and tell us you don't have enough sensitivity, don't have enough understanding. We'll have to teach you how to do it. Furkauf and Wurzweiler followed, but at the same time, a very significant development here, which survived in 1956, Dr. Belkin introduced a new college admission policy for students. It was called, at that time, the Jewish Studies Program, JSP. It's gone through several Gilgulim since then, depending on who was donating how much for what, and the names have changed, Erna Michaels, etc., etc., and it's now in one of its reincarnations. That was a very significant move. For the first time, he said, we have to serve the needs, I'm quoting, of students lacking significant background in Jewish knowledge. And some of the old timers here remember, he appointed Rav Moshe Bezdin Zatzal, who did an unbelievable job of Yesh Me'ayin, taking people with zero, with nothing, and making them B'nai Torah. But it was a small group. He worked with a small number of people, and highly successful. After that, it's expanded very greatly, and cannot say that it has the same success that we had in those days. I was then close to the program. I was part of the, quote, admissions committee. I and Jake Rabinowitz were the admissions committee. Moshe Bezdin was the faculty, basically. Hands-on, one-on-one, took care of every Talmud, and had really magnificent success. Habelki was very proud that he was Marbitz Torah to a group of people that never had the dream of being exposed to Torah. Many, many times we touched on the theme which Dr. Belkin identified himself almost as a sin, as a nom de, hidden alias, synthesis. He was Mr. Synthesis. I remember how many times I said to him, it's such a bad word. But synthesis means you take two things that are not the same and you combine them together. You end up with a third thing which is neither the first or the second. What kind of synthesis? As a biologist, it's called symbiosis. People, organisms living next to each other to mutual benefit. And you say no. No synthesis, he says. testimony is you have it wrong. Synthesis is not in the subject matter. Synthesis is in the individual. The individual has to have synthesis. Then when the individual has synthesis, it ends up with one component, the individual himself. Here, share with you a Gemara in Tainis, so happens in Shul. We're finishing off Tainis now, in the Balabata Shashir on Shabbos. Again, I don't remember ever discussing this with Rabbi Belkin, but I did with the Rav many times. The Gemara in Tainis, Daf Chaf Aleph, story of Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan. How many of you don't know the story? It's a popular agada. Okay. Ilfa and Rabbi Yochanan were chavrusas. They were starving, dying of hunger. They decided to leave the yeshiva and go earn a living. They sat under a bridge, and the lashon is, right, also to see Guda, right, have a kokachi rifter, they sat down to eat lunch. Also, tre malachi ashoris, shame Rabbi Yochanan domachad lechavrei, nashdu olayu hagidim nektalinu. Let's make the bridge collapse and kill them because they're talking about leaving Torah. And Rabbi Yochanan turned to Ilfa, that's the name of his chava. Did you hear what the voice said? He said, no, I never heard, didn't hear anything. Oh, he says, oh, you didn't hear anything, and I heard. You must be talking to me. Rabbi Yochanan said, I'm going back to the yeshiva. Ilfa said, no, he's going ahead into business. Rabbi Yochanan went back to the yeshiva, became the Rosh Yeshiva, Chief Gedula, right? And then they criticized Ilfa. They said, Ilfa, you were greater than Rabbi Yochanan. Had you come back, you would have been the Rosh Yeshiva. At that time, Ilfa was already a merchant marine, millionaire. He had ships. So Ilfa said, right, he also mar the goris, love a molech, surely would have been the one that was appointed. Ozel tole nafshi baskario de sfinter, he climbed up on a mast of a ship and said, ask me any shaila. If I can't answer you, I will jump off and kill myself. What are you saying? So the Rav said, this is what the Gemara was telling you. Deciding to go into business doesn't mean giving up Torah. You have to earn a living somehow. You earn a living at Torah. Ilfa studied with Rabbi Yochanan. You think he stopped learning when he became a merchant, became an owner of ships? Rav did mention, but since I'm learning Tainis, if you look in Tainis Chav Dalet, talking about people responding to the drought and Goyer Tainis, there you have the Gemara brings a story, interesting. Rabbi Yochanan and Rishokish were not told that there was a Gzeiras Tainis. And they woke up in the morning and heard about it. So they questioned, should they fast or not, since they were not Makabel Tainis from the night before. Right after that, the Gemara brings that what? There was a drought, and he said, Kamei Ilfa. Ilfa got up, Omar Mashiv Ruach, Vinosa Zika, and the wind began to blow. Morit Hagoshem, Viosa Mitra. Why do you want to put juxtaposition, Rabbi Yochanan with Ilfa? So the Rav said, to let you know that Ilfa didn't lose anything in Kodesh Baruch Hu's eyes. On the contrary, Rabbi Yochanan couldn't do what Ilfa could do. Rav cited this as kind of a justification for who we are, giving young men the ability to enter professions, to earn a living, the Kovedik, has nothing to do with being and becoming a Talmud Chacham. The issue is, are you prepared to devote the energies to do so? We never had a philosophy that said everybody can sit in a kolo for the rest of their lives. So at some point, you have to start earning a living. You know what? The Rambam, his derogatory comments about people who who depend on others to earn a living. But this is what we are. We're supposed to be the institution that makes it clear that you can be a big Talmud Chacham and earn a living any way you want, as long as you want to be a Talmud Chacham. I'm going to miss the opportunity to touch upon one of Dr. Belkin's greatest contributions, and that is the medical school. After Furkauf, JSP, which he's very proud of, Furkauf and Wurzweiler, these already reaches to the American Jewish community, but also to the entire American security. Dr. Belkin has as a now developed as a principle that we need to be the light unto the nations. We have to be able to serve the needs. If there's social work, it needs our imprint. If there's to be psychology, it needs our imprint, even though the people who are being imprinted are not necessarily members of our faith. Then came, in 1955, he decided to open up a medical school. There I was very closely involved, largely because of a young man, I don't know how many remember, Sam Hartstein with Issachar. Right. He was head of public relations, a magnificent negotiator. Dr. Belkin referred to us as the fire lashers, firefighters. When the medical school opened up, everybody knew we were going to be in trouble. Rofei cholim umatir isurim. That was the expression. Right. Indeed, problems came up. And somehow, the PR successes that Hartstein had, and the fact that I was in the scientific field, we had access. Problems of they want to open the labs on Shabbos. The problems that they want to give a voluntary lecture, optional lectures over the weekend. The boys don't have to come. Try to explain to them you can't do that to a medical student, that you don't have to come. And then you get judged for residency programs on the basis of whether you did come or didn't come, and so on. And it meant just cajoling, pleading there. That was like every second week, every third week, we're down at Albert Einstein to meet with a small group of people. They wanted to run a meeting, they want to get their own food in. Shiva isn't paying for it, but they want non-kosher food. You dealt with people, Jewish people largely, not the slightest idea about Yiddishkeit. And Baruch Hashem, it worked out to such an extent, I don't know if you people understand what really was going on. Let me give you a statistic. Between 1920 and 45, anti-Semitism was at its peak in America. The enrollment in medical schools for Jewish students declined by 50%. For every three students that applied, non-Jewish, two were admitted. For every Jewish student that applied, one out of 23 were admitted. The medical schools were closed. In the 1960s, if a bacher who pre-med here at Yeshiva College didn't get into medical school, it's because of his grades, not because of his religion. We never failed to place someone with proper grades in some accredited medical school. The religious barrier had disappeared by one fell swoop because he opened up Albert Einstein College of Medicine. And it was such an impressive opening, you people don't fully understand. The school was accredited before they graduated the first class on the basis of the quality of their faculty. And much of the faculty was Jewish who worked their way through against the anti-Semitism of the medical profession, worked their way through to achieve gedula in their own fields. I remember how many times I met with the head of neurosurgery there, Dr. Rappaport, who was a distant Jew, how over the years he became close to Yiddishkeit just on the basis of exposure to the students. Because he never imagined there could be people like that. Students who were gentle and kind, etc., etc. He was alien to the whole thing. time doesn't allow to do true justice. Dr. Belkin was the architect of Yeshiva. Whatever we are was his dream. And I think, in retrospect, everyone has to admit that his dream bore fruition. It wasn't a chalom shov. It was a dream. It could have been a nightmare. It was a wonderful dream. And we, you, are the beneficiaries. And we are greatly in his debt. Yehi zichro baruch. Excuse me for the personal stand, I couldn't be making any other contributions to this.